Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs.
Welcome to Our House. This is Susan Ballard sitting in for Peter Hunt. The show is brought to you by HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in the Buffalo Niagara region and all across New York State, plus both the Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts markets. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. You can call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700, and one of our skilled mortgage consultants will work with you to find the lowest rates and closing costs for your home financing needs. Hunt Mortgage has many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment. That allows you at no cost or risk to you to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for personalized, customized service that'll knock your socks off. Check out our low-rate guarantee. There are certain restrictions that apply, and the details are on our website at www.huntmortgage.com. And don't forget, the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline. That's the Hunt Hotline. It gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in all the markets we serve. Simply dial 631-4800. You just enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. You simply select the one you want, and you'll hear a brief description. That will then text you a link to a dedicated website on that property. All automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. There's a shortage of homes available for sale in many Western New York neighborhoods, and a very high number of well-qualified buyers actively looking for a new home. If you or anyone you know have been considering selling a property, now's the time. And at Hunt, you can list your home for free. That's right, any Hunt agent can work with you to aggressively market your home for sale to every potential buyer with absolutely no out-of-pocket expense to you. As a seller, you will pay a commission only if Hunt is successful in finding a buyer for you who is ready, willing, and able to purchase your home under terms and conditions acceptable to you. In addition, only through a Hunt agent will you hear these words: "We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it." That's the Seller Security Plan. Ask about how it can work for you by calling 633-9400 or stopping into one of our many open houses this weekend. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres. Our house is broadcast live on WBEN 930 AM. And for those of you who'd like to participate in today's show, if you have any questions or comments about any aspect of real estate, call us in the studio at 803-0930. Star 930 on your cell phone, or you can text us at 3930. Join us on the air today. We're going to have a very interesting show for you. Joining me on Our House this morning is Bill Tine, Vice President of Development and Diversification at Forbes Capretto Homes. Welcome, Bill, and thank you for joining me on Our House this morning. I know you're a busy man, as your bio reflects. In addition to being Vice President at Forbes Capretto, one of the leading home builders here in Western New York, you have quite an impressive bio, and so if you'll bear with me, I'll share a little bit of that this morning.
Sure.
So currently you serve as Amherst Industrial Development Agency board member. You're an Amherst Development Corporation board member, and throughout your career you have served on the New York State Fire Prevention and Building Codes Council. You have been a member of the National Association of Home Builders at the national level, including being the National Area 2 chairman. You've been the president of the New York State Builders Association. You've been a Buffalo Ambassador of the Year in 2015. You've been a National Association of Home Builders New York State representative. You've been the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association. You are a National Association of Home Builders Life Delegate, Vice Chairman of the Board for Partners of a Livable Western New York. I have to take a breath. This is getting long. Co-chair for the Congress of New Urbanism. You're a certified green professional, and I must say, in addition, you are the 2020 Buffalo Niagara Builders Association Presidential Appointee to the Board of Directors.
Oh, thank you. I know the president.
As the 2020 BNBA President myself, I have to thank you. And I want to thank you for being here today to talk a little bit about what's going on in Western New York and how we as a community are benefiting from the efforts of new construction and the need that we have for more residential options in Western New York.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
I know that in addition to all of these roles that you have, you have a background in planning And I know your emphasis is always on responsible and sustainable neighborhoods. I know you take that role really seriously.
Mm-hmm.
As a good steward of the community, you're not out here just to promote projects for the sake of development. There's really a quality of life aspect that you address personally and professionally.
No question about it. And I think a lot of us that are in the business have pride in what we do. You know, this is our legacy. We're leaving something tangible behind us, and it'll be here for future generations. So we want to leave something good behind us that is the really the mark of the work that we did for during our time.
As a member of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association for a long time, I know it's been a challenge. New construction, particularly within the last decade, we've had to come back from some challenges that the entire nation, I guess, endured.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 or maybe it's a little more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So there's been some real challenges, but it's also been beneficial for giving builders and developers and planners an opportunity to look at how to do things right. A lot of effort and time goes into planning projects, taking into consideration the needs of homeowners who need housing, as well as the needs of the community, and balancing the responsibilities as well.
Well, I don't think we can afford to really take a cavalier approach to what we do. I mean, ultimately, we're in business, and we won't stay in business if we're unable to sell the things we build. So we have to pay attention to what people want and what people need, and make sure we meet those expectations and those demands, or we're going to fail. So it's really important that we do that.
Fortunately, our area didn't suffer some of the dramatic changes to the market that other areas of the country did when there were issues with the financing that went along with new home construction. It was really a banking issue that we suffered,
mm-hmm.
not a construction issue. But somehow or another, it was called the housing bubble, and it all got attached to housing. So it almost made housing the scapegoat for some of the economic problems that we had.
I think those people in the know always understood that the health of the economy really depends on a healthy building and home building market. I mean, we really are the bottom of the economic food chain. Everything else drives from what we do. There's a reason why one of the fundamental benchmarks of the health of the economy is housing starts, because everyone really participates. We don't just build shelter, we're building communities. And so it's really important that everyone recognizes that they're participants in that effort.
Just recently, there was an article in the New York Times about the number of permits reaching a 13-year high. So it looks to the naked eye as if we're back on track in terms of permits being at record high numbers. But those permits are actually well below the numbers that we were building at 15 years ago.
Well, we're half of what we used to do. And if you look at the number of people that are still in the industry, we've been decimated. You just look at the association itself. So, you know, we refer to the Builders Association as the three-legged stool, because members are members at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level. And our membership reflects the stress of the Great Recession. We were, prior to that recession in 2008, we were over 300 members locally. Now we're less than 150. Statewide, we were 4,500 members. Now we're at 2,000. Nationally, we were at 240,000 members. We're at below 150,000 now. So it's really hurt. A lot of people left the industry, and it's particularly difficult to do it in New York. Really a regulated state.
And I certainly want to get into the aspects of regulation and what some of the challenges are. But when housing was running well and the number of permits was considerably higher, and there was very smart, controlled growth that was taking place across the country, home building was about 15% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
It can take on a very driving force in the economy. But at this point in time, it's not quite there yet. And the challenges seem to be wrapped up in a couple categories. The cost of materials have increased, labor shortages, and regulatory burden. That mm-hmm. seems to be the three biggest challenges. Obviously, things become more expensive. We understand that. But the separation in cost between an existing home and the cost of a new home is dramatically different. Mm-hmm. And it seems that the challenge now is being able to build affordable housing. That's the real challenge that's adding to the shortage of inventory that we have. As builders are looking at opportunities to build new homes in communities, the cost of regulation, the cost of labor because of the shortage of the labor supply have driven up the cost of the home. So really, very few people can afford new homes. And our listeners might be wondering, well, really, how does this affect me?
Yeah, and it's not a linear relationship. As prices go up, the number of people that are excluded from being able to qualify for a mortgage, it doesn't go at the same rate. It's an exponential change. So, it drops off precipitously as costs go up, the number of people that can qualify for a mortgage and buy that home. So controlling costs is always a big concern for the industry. We do like to point out that the things we build are modern. They don't require maintenance, same level of maintenance and the cost of ownership. So you save a lot of money in that regard, but you still have to be able to get over that initial hurdle and afford it. And that's a real challenge because, as you said, they're much more expensive than existing older homes.
And what we're coming to learn as someone involved in the real estate community, someone also involved in the home building community, 48% of homes are being purchased by millennials this past year. Jerry Howard, the National Association of Home Builders president, was just on television last week talking about this. So if nearly half of our homes are being bought by younger buyers, mm-hmm. In theory, they have less, they have accumulated less wealth in a shorter period of time and potentially don't have the funds to purchase these higher-end, more expensive homes. So it's really creating an additional burden on the inventory that we have available to have that many people entering the market as essentially first-time home buyers when there are so few homes that are available in new construction in price ranges that are accessible to first-time home buyers.
And the demand continues to rise nationally because the population nationally is growing and is projected to continue on that track. We're going to grow in the next 20 years by another 50 million people. There's a lot of people coming into the country, and they need homes. They need places to live. There's household formation happening all the time as young people grow into the point of their life where they need housing, they need the place of their own. They can't live, as some of the economists are fond of saying, they can't stay in their parents' basement forever.
Well, I think there's some other positive aspects that we can look at. While I mentioned there have been labor shortages, there are some indications that that's improving, that the concept of a blue-collar job is not necessarily as unattractive as it had been over the last 20 years. Educators, parents, society has sort of indicated that young people all have to go to college and should be aspiring to white-collar jobs. However, it's had a negative impact on a number of industries, including the housing industry, because fewer people are willing to become electricians and plumbers and hang drywall and frame houses. But we've begun to see that change a little bit, and there are some indications that the number of people entering into those trades might be starting to, if not increase, at least level off. We're not seeing the deterioration, and that could certainly improve the situation if the labor costs could come down a little bit.
There are a lot of programs being developed at nationally, statewide, in cooperation with education, the education industry, with institutions of higher learning to try to encourage people to go into those trades, even to the point of saying it at either community college levels or four-year universities, working on programs to get people into the trades, to say these are worthy of college degrees.
And I think the important thing that people need to recognize is these are good careers. This isn't just a job.
Good
this is a
jobs.
Career opportunity.
Good paying jobs, and for some people, those that have a proclivity to lead, there's opportunities to own your own business, and we encourage that at our company to work in cooperation with our trades to help them learn how to do business, teach them how to operate their businesses better. Because if there was someone that came up through the trades, through an apprenticeship program or some other means, and they didn't have that training in business, we try to help them in that regard and encourage them to be successful, because our success depends on theirs. We need those trades to build these homes.
Relative to new construction, it's a great opportunity for people, as we were talking about earlier. It's certainly a career opportunity for young people to consider because there's a demand. There's always going to be a demand for new construction. But our job as builders and developers is to balance the needs of the community as well as the needs of people for home and shelter. And recently, the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association has commissioned a study from the National Association of Home Builders to look at the economic impact of new construction in our community. Bill, I know this is an area that's of keen interest to you and has been because of your planning background, and certainly you like to have the data available to you. Describe a little bit about what the purpose of an economic impact study can be.
Well, it's to demonstrate to communities and political leaders and their constituents that home building is more than just simply having a house and collecting property taxes and then deciding how much money it costs to provide services to those homes. We often hear that that story told that housing doesn't pay for itself. There was a study done in one of our suburban communities maybe 10 years ago that decided that for every dollar collected in taxes, the community spent $1.62 providing services to those new neighborhoods. And so we wanted to look at this study, and this is not unique. This kind of story is being told all across the country. So NAHB developed a model that's very complex with the economics department at NAHB, which is full of PhD economists, and they looked at what happens when you build a community, the construction of 1,000 homes, and take a look at what the impact is economically to the community in a much more detailed manner, and recognize that there's a lot more than just property taxes. And it also recognizes that I think, you know, one of the things that we should point out is that new homes help subsidize old neighborhoods, because just like anything else, the newer neighborhoods are shiny and new. They're built with state-of-the-art materials. They don't demand operation and maintenance costs that other places do. You have the normal things. You still have to plow streets. You still have to pick up garbage. But you're not having water lines burst and having to repair those all the time and having those kind of problems that you have in older areas. So those kind of costs are really subsidized. The costs being borne by older neighborhoods are being subsidized by the newer neighborhoods that come online. And the lifetime of the materials lasts longer than the materials that were used to build those older neighborhoods 50, 75, 100 years ago.
And I would imagine there is a added benefit that the newer neighborhoods have incorporated energy efficient policies and construction methodologies that are really moving us towards greener opportunities. I know you're in your bio, you're a certified green professional.
Right.
So I know
right.
That you really could sort of weigh in on those sorts of benefits.
And it's a big part of the building codes today. There's a whole sector of the codes called energy codes. So a lot of these things are looked at very closely today. We're using codes more and building more efficiently, using energy more efficiently. And it, just like the neighborhoods, the homes require less maintenance. But that's not the whole story. That's just a small part of the story. Really what it is about is the idea that when we build a neighborhood, it's more than just the people that build the house. It's more than the people that are brick masons or the people that are excavating foundations or roofing and siding contractors or electricians. We have to go. A phone call, you want to say?
We do have a call.
Sure.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. We have Gustav from Williamsville joining us, and it looks like you've got a question this morning about wetlands.
Well, I'm a little thank you. I'm a little behind the curve on what's the current status of the federal versus the state wetlands. Are they the same requirements now? And what's the process for approving or in this whole wetland swap thing? I can't remember what that's about.
Yeah, that's a a fairly complex question. The truth of the matter is there are two different types of wetlands that are regulated in New York State. One regulatory process is through the federal government, and there really is – it's not driven for wetlands protection. It's underlying basis is clean water protection. So there's no such thing as the National Wetland Protection Act. What's actually being regulated is water quality under the Clean Water Act, and wetlands are considered a biofilter adjacent to navigable waters. And so a surface runoff that passes through them is filtered, helping keep the nation's waters clean. So wetlands are regulated at a federal level. Those are different rules than the ones that we have at the state level, which are habitat driven. So the state has a freshwater wetlands program, and that's administered here. There's 10 regions across the state. We're in Region 9, so the Buffalo office is the group that oversees that. And from the federal side, we typically would be dealing with the United States Army Corps of Engineers out of the Buffalo District office. And we can get into that a little more later, maybe after the break if you want to, and talk about some of the details of that. But there are two different programs and two different permitting processes and two different delineation processes that you have to go through. Although once you get to the permit process, there's something called a joint application for permit, which is not necessarily very joint.
Well, we are going to have to go to a break. Gustav, I thank you for calling in this morning. Obviously, Bill, you're an expert in these areas, but we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Susan Ballard sitting in for Peter Hunt. Our House is brought to you by HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web to find all the homes available throughout the regions we serve, with access to a complete set of home ownership services, all powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in the Buffalo Niagara region and all across New York State, plus both the Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts markets. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. For more information about our exclusive mortgage programs that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. You can also ask about our pre-purchase commitment, and that's available only at Hunt Mortgage. You can call our Hunt ERA Customer Service Center at 633-9400, where one of our customer service representatives can instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs. Whether you're buying or selling a home, you need financing, insurance, or even home improvements. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the Seller Security Plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. I'm in the studio today with Bill Tine, Vice President of Development and Diversification at Forbes Capretto Homes. If you'd like to join the conversation today, call us in the studio at 803-0930, *930 on your cell phone, or text us your question at 3930. I want to make sure before we get into the conversation again that I have an opportunity to remind everyone that we have a Hunt Military Rewards open house event this weekend. That's taking place both today and tomorrow. And with the Hunt Military Rewards Program, military families may be eligible to receive up to $7,500 in cash back or rewards when they buy or sell a home. And Hunt Mortgage will also credit the cost of an appraisal for all veterans or active duty military that apply for a loan with Hunt Mortgage during this open house event this weekend. So it's a great opportunity for people to get out. It's a beautiful day. It's a nice sunny Saturday, and hopefully people will get out there and take advantage of that. Bill, before the break, we were talking about, we were in the weeds, no pun intended, relative to wetlands. But that's a really specific area that is some type of regulation that impacts the ability to develop land and build homes in communities. So that was a great question that we had from Gustav about that. But I wanted to ask you more generically why new home construction is good for the economy and good for the community in which we live.
Well, as I said a little earlier, we're really at the bottom of the economic food chain when we're building communities. And, you know, there's a lot more than just simply the folks that are involved with the construction of a house or the building of the streets and sewer lines. So it's more than excavators. It's more than foundation experts building foundations or brick masons or roofing and siding companies, electricians, plumbers, attorneys getting the project approved, engineers designing the developments. It's really the idea that once this neighborhood exists, it's occupied by people like you and me, and we participate in the economy of our region because we're spending our salaries in these communities, and so the houses have to have furniture. If you sell furniture, it goes in the houses that we build. If you sell cars, they get parked in the garages we build, and they're driven by the people that live in those houses. If you sell ice cream, the folks that eat ice cream live in houses. If you're a dentist and you repair cavities for people who eat too much ice cream, that's those people that get cavities and go to the dentist live in houses. Every single sector of the economy is impacted by home building and the construction of these new neighborhoods. So growth is a really important thing for neighborhoods, and it's a much more complex analysis than just simply looking at how much money we spend picking up garbage versus how much money we collect in taxes to pay for picking up garbage.
Let's start to talk a little bit about what new construction means in our community. We don't have the data from 2019 available, but in 2018, there were approximately 1,000 permits issued for single-family home construction throughout Erie and Niagara County. Mm-hmm. And I think that surprises people. I think people think, you know, there must be thousands of homes that are being built every year. We're lucky if we can bump up against a number that we can round up to 1,000.
That's true, and it's probably, you know, throughout the course of my career at a peak, which unfortunately was early in my career, I've seen a steady decline in the number of permits that we've been doing in Western New York, but at one time it was 3.5 times that number. So we used to do 3,600 permits in Western New York. It's a real challenge to keep this going.
And reflecting that is that in 2017, there were approximately 900, a little fewer than 900 permits that were issued in Erie and Niagara County. So mm-hmm. In a way, we celebrate a 10% growth from 2017 to 2018, but that still leaves us with a considerable deficit.
Yeah, but I think there's cause for optimism. I think we're really well positioned if you look at the things that are happening with climate change and as you talk to green building and green infrastructure, we sit at a place that has had a significant population loss over the last 70 years, and we're seeing a bit of a comeback now. I think a friend of mine is a mayor of Birmingham, Michigan, who is fond of calling this area, let's stop referring to this as the Rust Belt. Let's start talking about this area as the Lake Belt. And there's real opportunity here. We have infrastructure that served a much greater population at one time. We sit 600 feet above sea level at the foot of the world's freshwater supply. We're really well positioned for growth, and I think we're going to see that in the coming years. So it's a good place to be in Western New York right now.
So that population growth obviously needs to have some housing that goes along with it, and I know there's concerns about companies when they're coming into the area about where will our employees reside. Mm-hmm. And essentially, housing is where jobs sleep at night.
No question about it.
So the need for housing to be available for the economy to continue to improve in our area is so linked to housing. And I know from the real estate side of things at Hunt Real Estate, we're keenly aware of the listing inventory, we call it, but it's really the need for houses going on the market. There are fewer houses on the market every month, every year, and it's creating a challenge for buyers. And as that Jerry Howard's story earlier this past week about the percentage of millennials and first-time home buyers that are in the market and the fact that homes are less affordable, we need to inject some other alternatives into the pipeline. And new construction is really the only way to do that other than putting rental properties into the pipeline, which we've done a pretty good job at in our community, particularly in the the city of Buffalo having some opportunities, but they tend to be really high-end. It doesn't seem to be addressing the needs that we have for people that are looking for single-family homes throughout the Western New York community.
Well, and communities really put the rules in place because they're the ones in charge of the comprehensive planning and the vision for their communities. The home rule is the rule in New York State, and the municipalities have the authority over land use, and they're the ones that decide what they want their communities to look like going forward. So they put in place the zoning and all of those kind of rules, and typically what we see are, one, an environmental look at development that talks about the impacts of development to the environment, but even those laws are supposed to consider the social and economic impacts as well and weigh and balance those against environmental impacts and decide to, you know, what's the best course of action. And one of the things that's happened over the last several decades has been increasingly communities looking to say we want to be look more rural and build at lower densities, which is more expensive. The cost of infrastructure is the same to build a road, whether you put a lot along the side of that road that's 40 feet wide or a lot that's 150 feet wide. It costs the same amount of money to build the road. So communities should think the same way developers have to think. If we want to build something more affordable, then if the density's higher, there's more homes, then we can divide that cost up against more dwellings and lower the cost for folks to, and make it easier for them to get in as costs rise. Density doesn't have to be a bad thing. You can look at some patterns of development that are really attractive at higher densities. You just need to travel a little bit and look at other places that have been built and see some really beautiful places. But communities have the same issue. They collect taxes. They have to operate and maintain the infrastructure. If they have fewer homes and larger lots, it costs more per house to provide those services because there are fewer houses to divide the cost up and apply against and amortize those costs against those homes. So higher density can help lower their costs ongoing and help the tax load that way too. Those are decisions communities make, though. We build to the rules that the communities put in place. If they have lower density requirements, that's what we build. If they allow higher density, we'll build that, and we'll try to make that barrier to admission lower it by bringing things in that are more affordable.
So let's say there's an agreement then, and a community welcomes a project, whether it has a higher density or a lower density. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the decisions are made jointly. The project is approved, and construction commences. Based on this study that we have from the National Association of Home Builders about the economic impact of new home construction, and mm-hmm. in particular residential construction, single family, and also multifamily, that we've broken that study out, or they've broken the study out for us into both of those categories. So looking at home building, there's sort of three phases that they've identified.
Yes.
The first phase being a construction phase, the second a ripple effect, and the third the occupancy phase. Mm-hmm. Can you help me to understand or explain to our listeners how those phases are broken out?
Sure. The construction phase is the direct impacts of the economic impact of the construction of the neighborhoods and the homes themselves. So it's the purchase of the materials, and most of those are purchased locally. So it's supporting the local economy, and it's the purchase of all the building materials and the employees and equipment that it takes to assemble the neighborhood, the streets, the sewers, the water lines, the drainage systems, and then the homes themselves, to put them all together, to all the trades that we talked about a little earlier, the electrical elements, the plumbing, the roofing, the siding, the framing, the carpentry. All of those things are the direct impacts of construction. Then the second is the ripple effect. So the people that are employed building those homes, they collect salaries and they pay taxes and they have an income which they spend in the community. So those first impacts are really the first year of the construction of the home, when all that stuff is finished, all that work is completed and done. The ongoing impacts are the third phase, which is the occupancy of the neighborhood, people living in those homes, and then they spend 3/5 of their income locally. They go to stores. They make purchases locally. They fill their car with gasoline. Everything that you do is done locally, and that's that analysis of goes on forever, that amount of money that's spent in the community.
And I think it's important for people to understand that, because there are some misperceptions out there about new home construction being a burden on communities. And I think we need to look at the overall economic picture. And when we return from the break, we'll have an opportunity to talk about some of those actual costs that are involved. We'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Susan Ballard sitting in for Peter Hunt. Our house is brought to you by HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web to find all the homes available throughout the regions we serve, with access to a complete set of home ownership services powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in the Buffalo Niagara region and all across New York State, plus both the Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts markets. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. For information about our exclusive mortgage program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. You can also ask about our pre-purchase commitment available only at Hunt Mortgage, or you can call our Hunt ERA Customer Service Center at 633-9400, where one of our customer service representatives can instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs. Whether you are buying or selling a home, you need financing, insurance, or even home improvements. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. We're back in the studio with Bill Tine, Vice President of Development and Diversification at Forbes Capretto Homes. Bill, we were talking about the economic impact of new construction in our community. And it's not just about the dollars and cents. There's a benefit to having newer neighborhoods and newer infrastructure in communities and having options for people to reside. But as I said earlier, housing is where jobs sleep at night. And we are trying to improve the economic situation in our community. And the new job opportunities that are available in the Buffalo-Niagara Medical Corridor, some of the companies that are looking at coming into our area, some of the companies that have been in our community for generations are seeing opportunities for growth and improvement, and their labor force has grown. But I think somehow our industry of home building is underrepresented in some of those numbers in terms of jobs and employment and what the home builders mean to this community.
Without question. So you know, often hear about government policies being promoted to encourage businesses to move into the area and stimulate job creation. But rarely, when you look at the list of the top employers in the area, do you ever see the home building industry, because it isn't one company. It isn't one single company and one factory. Just as a comparison, for example, we mentioned a little earlier there were 2,000 members in the New York State Builders Association. Those 2,000 members, though, represent 90,000 employees. But there's no factory with 90,000 employees in it. I can't imagine any government official ever putting a government policy in place that would harm a factory that had 90,000 employees in it. But when we talk about the kind of things we want to do that would cripple the home building industry, we never think of it in those terms, because the jobs are scattered across the landscape in individual housing sites. And you see a few people here on a job working at any given time. You don't see even the number of people involved in the construction of the house all sitting on that job site, because, you know, you need to buy windows. There's a window company that's supported by the construction industry, windows and doors, and all the other factors that we talked about. All those people, framers, trim carpenters, rough carpenters, all of these people are companies that are involved in it, and they all have employees, not just a proprietor. And you add all those jobs up, that's a huge, tremendous opportunity for job creation in our community already, let alone the things that we talked about with the occupancy phase of home construction, with the people that then move into those houses and then support the rest of all of the other sectors of the economy.
And I think so often when we talk about new construction, oftentimes people are deaf to the subject if they live in a community where there really isn't land available for new development and construction. What they're not recognizing, however, is that there are a tremendous number of people in their own community that are truly dependent on new construction, because they sell windows, because they are a roofing contractor, because they have some job that is related to to new construction, whether it be financing or sales or actual construction.
Sell silverware. People live in houses, eat, and they use forks and spoons.
When building houses in the past, I used to say, you think the house is expensive. Once you move in, that's when the real costs come into play. All those things that you have to buy for your new home, or the things that were satisfactory in a prior home that you want to replace for the new home. So it really does have an effect throughout the community. And I think that's where this study from the National Association of Home Builders that the local Buffalo Niagara Builders Association commissioned is going to be really helpful in helping us to educate the community. One of the primary audiences, however, are the municipalities. Mm-hmm. The people that builders and developers have to go before to request permission to have projects proposed in their communities. And oftentimes, the concern of those municipalities would be, what's it going to cost our town? And
right.
It's a very immediate concern about this perceived burden that for every new house we build, it means a new classroom, it means a new park, it means a new service that needs to be provided to residents of those new neighborhoods. And I know you've tried to help people understand that there's a connection between what's been done before and what's going to be done in the future.
Well, to me, it's really part of the responsibility of being a community member. I mean, we all do it. I often hear people saying, well, we don't want to pay school taxes, but we don't have any kids going to the school district. But, even you, as a person saying that, and the individual that says that, at one time, they were a school student. So all of us have had our turn at that point in our lives, and our lives change and our needs change, but we've all benefited from other people while we were students who didn't have kids, who were paying school taxes that helped us go to school. And it's the same, it really goes on with everything we're talking about, same building schools. I went to school, but my parents didn't build the school I went to. Some previous generation built the building that I went to school in. And so we all have this responsibility to maintain community. And that's really how the whole country developed. Western New York started with a development company. The Holland Land Company is 6 Dutch financiers, purchased the land in Western New York, hired a guy by the name of Joseph Ellicott to be their land agent, who mapped it, platted it, surveyed it, put all those, and then sold off parcels. There's a reason why everything in the area is named Ellicott. It's all named after Joseph Ellicott and his brothers. So it's really that idea that, how did they build? Well, the first thing they did was they set up communities, which were stagecoach stops along the Onondaga Trail, which became Route 5 and Main Street. And each one of those became a town. And what the pioneers did was they made someone the superintendent of schools. They built one-room schoolhouses. Someone was made superintendent of roads. They cut down trees, laid the logs down, and built what they called corduroy roads. And they built infrastructure. And then once they put that infrastructure in place as developers, they then said to the rest of the pioneers, welcome, come join us in our community. And that's how we got here. And we're really continuing on that legacy with what we do today. We just don't build corduroy roads anymore. We put asphalt down and curbs.
Your expertise is showing, Bill. You're quite the historian of Western New York. We did have a text that came in, and it says, while the cost of new build has increased, it's the property taxes in the state that make building a new home unattainable. I'm sure new home construction in low tax states is much higher than high taxed blue states. That comment regarding taxes prompts me to look at part of this study from NAHB, and it says in the first year, the impact of single-family construction, which is estimated at about 1,000 homes, that the local income would be about $240 million. Business owners' income would be about $81 million. Local wages and salaries, $158 million. And the local taxes, going to the conversation with the texter here, is about $16 million. But the key at the end of this is that there are 2,899 local jobs that are supported by that 1,000 homes having been built.
And this is just the jobs in the direct enterprise of building the homes. This isn't talking about the ripple effect and then the ongoing occupation phase.
The report actually breaks it down, because there's 2,000 some jobs in the actual construction, 435 jobs in the wholesale and retail, going to the windows and
the support
things that
businesses,
are,
right.
And then 197 jobs in business and professional services,
right.
Architects, engineers,
right.
All of those things add up to almost 3,000 jobs from 1 year of construction.
Right.
It's amazing that those numbers are a secret.
And those jobs are paying income taxes, and they're purchasing materials where they're paying sales taxes. There's, you know, they're buying fuel, paying fuel taxes. There's all kinds of revenue coming back to this. The revenue stream to government is tremendously large from the construction of homes. It's not just the property taxes.
And that really gets to the second phase, the ripple phase, where those monies are being spent. I mean, the economic health of a community really has to do with the rate at which money flows through the community.
Right.
And new construction really prompts that to happen. It has to happen in order for that to be viable.
Right.
And I think it's underestimated when municipalities are simply looking at the costs of putting in communities. And there are legitimate concerns that communities have in terms of what will it cost them. But I think some of these projections that we have, because they're looking at these numbers, not just in 1,000 houses in 1 year, but the longer term effect of that and what that means on the communities over a 15-year period of time, it's staggering when you reach it out 15 years.
It is, and I think it's also important to recognize that I think a lot of people seem to think that the cost of building a home in a neighborhood when you have to provide services is the reason why we have high taxes. It's just simply because we're providing services to neighborhoods, not that government does other things. And they're collecting a lot of revenue from the construction, so it's really more a question of what choices our political leaders are making as they set up their budgets and they're deciding what they're going to spend money on for government, along with the decisions that their constituencies are asking them to make. It's far more complex than just the idea that we build a road and you got to plow it and therefore it costs too much where taxes are too high because we got to plow another foot of street. That's not the story. It's a much more complex issue, and really our business is more than paying its fair share, and it really is the reason why the other elements exist. We're creating the communities.
And this report is so comprehensive from NAHB that many of us that are involved in the community have to really sift through it, mm-hmm. and that are in the industry, I should say, have to sift through it and understand the detail of it. And we're going to be having the opportunity to roll this out to the community in a format that they're able to understand, also presenting it to officials that are in positions to need to have this information to understand the effect. But the net economic impact estimates that are provided in this study for 1,000 single-family homes over a 15-year period of time, the cumulative cost compared to the cumulative revenue, so that's taking into consideration the overall cost of these projects for 15 years, and then looking at the cumulative revenue, leaves a net revenue of $254 million over 15 years.
Right.
It's incredible to me to look at those numbers. And the job numbers that go along with that are 4,812 jobs in the phase one and phase two jobs. That's the construction phase and the ripple effect phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add the phase three to that, there's another 900 jobs there. Where do we have the opportunity to gain 5,000 jobs in a 15-year period of time without introducing new companies, new tax abatements, incentives to try to get people to come here? These are things that are happening in our community already, where we don't have to give anything up.
Right. It's like, as we said a little earlier, it's the challenge the industry has is showing people that we're not all in one factory, but we're tremendously large.
Well, Bill, I have to thank you for joining me at our house today. A special thank you to you. This is Susan Ballard wishing you a great day. Remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is Hunt Country.